Hello, I'm Kathleen Dunn on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio for this Wednesday, the 6th of June. The New York Times had an interesting piece on May 29 looking at the digital divide in this country, and not just who has all the digital equipment, but how we're using that equipment was the focus of this article. Wasting time is new divide in digital era. And the article begins like this. In the 1990s, the term digital divide emerged to describe technology's haves and have-nots, and it inspired many efforts to get the latest computing tools into the hands of all Americans, particularly low Americans. But as access to devices has spread, children in poorer families are spending considerably more time than children from more well-off families using their television and gadgets to play games and to be on social networking sites. Although it's interesting when you break down the numbers, it seems as though everybody is spending an incredible number of hours per day doing just that. The FCC is considering a proposal to create a digital literacy core. Do we need such a digital literacy core in the country? Our guest this hour is Professor Kevin Clark. He's a professor in the Instructional Technology Program and director of the Center for Digital Media Innovation and Diversity in the College of Education and Human Development at George Mason University. He has worked on the development of educational interactive media for diverse audiences and has spent a number of years as a designer and consultant in educational game design, online, and interactive media. Professor Clark is with us this hour. I think this should be a rather interesting conversation because, you know, when you think about it, one of the huge changes in all of our lives is the internet and using all these fancy telephones and spending hours and hours on these fancy telephones and computers that we have. Are we wasting our time on them, or are we becoming smarter people as a result of that? And what about this divide? So I think you'll have a lot to say about it, because most of us are engaged in using these devices, right? 800-486-8655 is our number. 800-486-8655. Email is talk@wpr.org. Facebook page is the Kathleen Dunn Show. Professor Clark, thank you very much for being with us this hour.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah. Let's start with just the figures on the number of people who have computers and things like fancy phones in their houses right now. Is it most of the population?
It's not most of the population. Probably about 100 million people, loosely about a third of all Americans have not adopted broadband in their home. So, and then when you look at that number, there is difference in terms of economics. So 46% of low-income families have broadband as opposed to 90% of higher-income families that typically have broadband. So there is still somewhat of a divide when we look at broadband adoption. But when we look at mobile technology, mobile phone adoption, the Pew Internet Life Project recently released a study that showed that African American and minority and Latino populations were adopting mobile phones at a higher rate than white populations.
Hmm. When you hear about this idea of the FCC creating a digital literacy core, do you say that's something I can get behind and it's something that's needed?
It's something that is needed. I think the function and the idea behind it is a good one, because this technology has moved so quickly that a lot of us haven't had the time to figure out, okay, how do we harness this great tool and integrate it into our daily lives, because we're so used to doing things the way we've always done them. And so now every day there's a new device or a new app or a new tool, and figuring out, first of all, what tools are good, and then how to integrate those tools into our everyday lives, I think, is something that we need help with sometimes.
Hmm. Well, you're a person who designs some of those tools. What kinds of tools do you design that are used for educational purposes?
Well, the work that I do really looks at educational games and educational video games and interactive tools. And my focus is really working with young people to help change their mindset from sitting down in front of a screen and playing games for hours on end, and instead helping them recognize that they can create games, and they can produce games, and they can create their own media. And so moving from this mindset of consumption to production. And so we work with middle and high school students on weekends, for example, to teach them how to use educational video game tools to create their own games, so that they begin to have more say over the content that they're consuming.
Mm. And are you convinced, Professor Clark, that we can use this medium to really make us smarter?
Yes, I think the operative word is integration. And figuring out how you want or need to use a particular tool in your everyday life and function. And I think sometimes we get caught up into a gadget for gadget's sake. And I always tell the story, I am a technology person, but I had one of those paper calendars for the longest time, those organizers. I kept them for the longest time.
I know, I like those.
Yeah, they're perfect, right? You can write stuff on it really quickly. And I didn't, it was years before I changed over to a electronic PDA. And the thing that pushed me over the edge is I lost it. I misplaced it for a day or two and realized I didn't have a backup. And so for me, that was the tipping point. And I think when we think about technology and using it in our life and in our schools, we have to figure out what the relevancy is and why should I use this instead of what I've already been doing. And I think the digital literacy course can play a role by helping people figure out how this new technology can be integral in their everyday life and learning.
And the thing that's phenomenal about it is that you can have access to an incredible amount of information, history and geography and all of that.
Yes, and that's a double-edged sword. So you can have access to any and everything, and that's
right.
The good news. The bad news is you have access to any and everything.
And everything, right.
And so figuring out, here's where digital literacy comes in, helping people, giving us the skills and the techniques and strategies to help us determine, well, what information is good information? How do I know that this is a good source? How do I fact check? How do I double check the information that I'm receiving from all of these sources? How do I triangulate to make sure that the information I gather in one site is also or is similar to the information I gather on another site? So there's a level of responsibility that comes with this new ability to be able to access all information or at you know, anywhere, anytime.
Right. The figures that were cited in the New York Times article were sort of hard to take in, and I'd like for you to tell me what you think about this. When we're talking about the divide in terms of lower-income children spending more time, in some ways I'm thinking it's meaningless because the amount of time that everybody is spending is unbelievable. Can this be true? The Times says the study found that children of parents who don't have a college degree spend 11.5 hours each day exposed to media from a variety of sources, including TV, computer, and other gadgets. That's an increase of 4 hours and 40 minutes per day in the last 12 years. Children of more educated parents, generally understood as proxy for higher socioeconomic status also use their devices quite a bit. They're all the way up to 10 hours of multimedia a day, including a 3.5-hour jump since 99. So everybody's using it for all of these hours a day. Isn't that astounding?
It is astounding. And I think one thing to keep in mind is that when they're reporting these usage numbers, they include multitasking. So they're throwing everything, television, phone, music. So when you think of it that way, not that it should make you feel any better, it's still a high number. And I think when we begin to disaggregate the data regarding socioeconomic status, what we see is that it's about choice and it's about what people have access to. So in terms of entertainment, when you look at, well, what are people actually looking viewing, and you'll see that lower socioeconomic groups are viewing more TV. Because in terms of entertainment, that's what is available.
Mm-hmm.
The other aspect to think about is when you're looking at parental involvement or monitoring, you may find that students who have or children who have more time to themselves tend to gravitate toward those forms of media. So they're not involved in an activity, so they end up watching a video or they end up listening to music. And I think, again, this could be where this digital literacy core comes in terms of helping parents as well as children to understand the impact of media and to also come up with alternatives for the media.
So how would you structure a digital media course? What should be taught?
Wow. The first thing that I think is paramount is to get a really clear sense of your audience. I think, you know, in the 80s, and to some extent in the 90s, the goal was to get everybody using a particular software package. And so we fanned out across communities, especially low-income communities, and we taught everybody how to use this particular software suite. Well, maybe they don't need to know that particular software suite. Maybe they need to figure out how to use it in another way. So I think one of the cornerstones of a digital or media literacy course is, one, to look at the needs of the target audience. Two, to look at what the resources or assets are of that community. So if you're trying to get people to use tablets or phones, and they don't have access to Wi-Fi, you know, then you might want to rethink what you're teaching. And then thirdly, I think it's a matter of getting a sense of what tools are available and what information is available to provide information about the tools. I always my children look at a lot of products, and we use a nonprofit website, commonsensemedia.org, and that's how I can make decisions about what they should look at, what I'm going to download onto our tablet. And so I think helping people to become more informed about what's out there is also something that's very important.
It is, and it's hard to monitor everything that's out there. There is some real junk that's out there, and you would prefer that it not be in your house.
Yes, exactly. And I think the challenge is that every day new applications and new tools are becoming available, and in a sense anybody can make anything, and so which is really a blessing and a curse.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's really paramount that we become much more informed consumers. And, you know, I have trouble keeping up with everything. And, you know, somebody walks up to me every day and says, "Have you seen this new app?" And I'll say, "No." And then I end up looking at it and, making a decision on my own. But I think we need to begin to look at these resources and identify these resources that provide us with information about how to make evaluations in terms of use.
We're going to welcome phone calls. Our guest this hour is Professor Kevin Clark. He's a professor in the Instructional Technology Program, and he is director of the Center for Digital Media Innovation and Diversity in the College of Education and Human Development at George Mason University. Our attention drawn to this subject because of an interesting article in the New York Times on May 29th in which it looked at primarily, we know that there's been a digital divide when it comes to ownership of broadband and computers and other digital devices among those who make more money in this country. But there also now appears to be a divide in terms of the, not a huge divide because everybody's spending an inordinate amount of time on these devices, but low-income children are spending more time than well-off families using their TV and gadgets to, as the professor said, watch movies and entertainment kinds of shows when perhaps these devices could be used for terrific educational benefit. And so the FCC is sending digital literacy trainers to a lot of organizations in this country, like Boys and Girls Club, the League of United Latin American Citizens, the NAACP, and they're going to be teaching basic keyboard use, word processing, how to apply for jobs online, and filters to block children from seeing pornography, and the use of apps and devices that the professor was mentioning. So what do you make of all of this? It's a whole different world, isn't it? And how do we use it to become smarter, better engaged people? What do you think about a digital divide? What in the world do you think about those numbers that we gave, the number of hours? I was in that category yesterday. I got to tell you, with the election, I was reading blogs and reading news reports from all over the country. And then I think I watched 5 hours of television yesterday by the end of the night. Whew, I had a headache. So how can anybody do that for 10 hours a day? It's hard. And maybe some of you will say that this is good, that this is a whole new world, and some of us are just too old to understand the benefits of being online all the time. 800-486-8655. 800-486-8655. Bread and Form is the article is now on our Facebook page, so you can spend your digital time very wisely, just what we're talking about, and read the article. That's the Kathleen Dunn Show. Let's take your phone calls. We'll be with them in a moment. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Professor Kevin Baker is our guest this hour. He is professor in the Instructional Technology Program and also is the director of the Center for Digital Media Innovation and Diversity in the College of Education and Human Development at George Mason University. We start our calls with Emily in Madison. Hi, Emily.
Hi.
Hi.
I am a parent of a one-year-old and a three-year-old. And I was, listening to the numbers you were quoting about children viewing 10, 11 hours of digital media. I'm just wondering, what the guest suggests as far as, moving forward as a young parent in these times and balancing, knowledge of digital media because it's out there and it's a part of our lives, with not being overwhelmed and having too much in our life.
That's a great question, and I'm not a child development expert, but I'll give you a little bit based on my experience as a parent of two children. I have a 12-year-old son and a 9-year-old daughter, and my knowledge as an educator, and that is with young children, they are sensory focused, so they learn by feeling things, hearing things, seeing, touching, tasting. They put so much stuff in their mouth sometimes that we don't want them to do that.
Mm-hmm.
So the younger the child, I would say really spend your time doing those types of things. So going outside, experiencing the world around them, playing. And then as they get older, then it's okay to kind of introduce aspects of, of digital media. I always there's an example where I would say I don't want my child to the first time they see a cat to be on a screen. Oh. I want them to see a cat in person, so right. that when they see a cat on the screen, they'll be able to make the connection. And so that's just my advice as a parent, and then you can choose to introduce various forms of digital media in terms of music and videos as the children get older.
Mm, that's good advice. You need to see the cat first. I like
exactly.
that.
Yep.
Jesse in Waukesha. Thanks, Emily, for your call. Jesse in Waukesha. Hi.
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 Hi, Jesse.
Love your program. I was listening to it today. I have a job working with plants, and I have that job because I taught myself how to do it on the Internet.
Oh, great.
Over the course of, 5 years. And I think it's really cool that there might be some programs coming out to help teach kids some technological literacy, and it would be cool, I think, for those that are developing the programs, if included in them was some basic research and composition and teaching kids how to find good sources for information and what's a good source and what might be a not so good source for, because it's a great learning tool, the Internet especially.
Tell me how you learned your profession on the Internet. What did you do?
Basically, anything I was ever curious about, I would jump on the Internet and start at Google, and I was always really, really focused on English in school, so I had the skills to know how to weed out what I was reading, and I think that was a big help.
Mm-hmm.
And I'd always been a pretty avid reader, so if I was curious about something, I would spend hours online just reading about it, and eventually got confident enough that I could put some of the skills that I was reading about into play. Mm-hmm. So. Definitely a really cool tool, and it's nice to be, if it's used in that way.
Yeah. And that's a great example of how you can use the Internet to acquire content and information that you may not be able to do ordinarily. So there are a lot of people who go online and teach themselves all kinds of things. How many times, have you lost the instructions to put together that bookshelf, and then you just go online and there's a YouTube video that shows you how to do it. And so that's excellent. And I do agree when you're talking about helping young people to figure out how to know what valid sources are and how to sift through sources. When we were in English class, we did the comparative and we studied literature and writing, and I think we need to bring some of that to looking at sources on the Internet so that we can get a sense of, okay, what's this, the point of view of this website, and what's the perspective. And so helping students to giving students those skills, I think, is key.
Thank you so much for your call, Jesse. I'm glad you were listening today. David in Milwaukee. Hi, David.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Uh-huh.
I think your guest makes a whole lot of sense, and this is something that I actually have spent a lot of time thinking about, and I have some firsthand experience working with inner-city youth on media literacy issues. And I think in terms of, when we think about what technology to push into the classrooms, I think the two major considerations that often get overlooked are planned obsolescence and diminishing returns. So about diminishing returns, for example, your guest was talking about how he switched over from a paper organizer to a digital calendar. And so, there's a very specific advantage to making the transition from paper to digital there. But, if you think about getting locked into an endless cycle of upgrades once you're in the digital, each one of those upgrades has less and less to offer once you've identified the specific advantage to, making the switch to digital. And so I think, the tactic to keep in mind there is that, you have to teach specific skills, not specific software packages. If you're just teaching software packages, then the schools are just functioning as a subsidy for industry.
Before you go, David, tell us about the media literacy work that you've been doing in schools. What do you do?
I'm not doing it at the moment, but a couple of years ago, I spent a year in it was a CLC program that was part of I think Boys and Girls Club, and I was going into school and helping students work on short video projects. And this is kind of interesting from a media literacy perspective too. I developed this assignment where I wanted the students to videotape their. I think there's way too many ads around, and when you talk about media usage by children, you kind of have to acknowledge that. You know, we spend more money as a culture bombarding our children with lies than teaching them how to think. And, you know, the extent to which many of these technologies are ad-supported, I mean, that really needs to be taken into consideration, too. But in any event, we were working on short video projects, and so I wanted the students to, they were third and fourth graders, and there's a lot of social promotion, and students get held back because it's disciplinarily convenient, and so I'm not sure exactly how old all the children I was working with was. It's a rotating group of about five students who were sort of at the core, but I wanted them to, go home and record their favorite TV commercial, bring it in, and we'd talk about it and figure out how to reproduce it in their own idiom, and then I'd help them do that. And then I realized I couldn't do this assignment because, younger households have DVD players, not VCRs, and so like this assignment that was really straightforward with the technology from 10 years ago is this this ability to make new recordings and carry them around has been engineered out of existence, turning home video into a strictly consumer proposition, and so that's kind of some of the dynamic that I was trying to address is these students, a lot of them had cell phones, I think, because their parents wanted to keep track of them, and so the ability to make these digital recordings is almost as ubiquitous as pen and paper, and so I was kind of interested in the aesthetic implications of cell phone quality video. But we also had some low end consumer cameras. There was not a well funded program. The teacher that I was working under was paying for it a lot out of his own pocket, and
it sounds like it was a great program, Professor Clark.
Well, yeah, and I think, David, you raised an excellent point, and that is focusing on skills and not on specific tools, because, you learn a tool today and there's a new one tomorrow. And so with young people, we want to really help them to be facile and agile in this environment, in this ever-changing environment, instead of saying, well, I only know how to use this one package, I don't know how to do anything else. And so I think you raise an excellent point.
Well thank you. I've been really excited listening to a lot of the things you're saying.
Great. Thanks very much, David, for the call. It sounds like the work that he's doing, that you're doing, is so valuable, and yet there's no systematic way that this is being taught or brought to our schools, and so we're missing the mark here, because students are using all of these devices. We really do need to teach them all the great possibilities of usage of these devices.
Yeah, I agree. And I think sometimes, especially in schools, with such an emphasis on content, that it's hard to then layer on top of that new strategies or delivery methods, and especially as it relates to giving students these new skills. So we're tend to be more focused on making sure they get the content, they can pass the class or do well on a standardized test. And I think the way we can kind of get at this skill development is through projects and having students be involved in creating knowledge and creating content, and then they'll use those skills to do that.
We have lines open now. Our lines have been crowded. If you'd like to join the conversation, please do. The number is 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. We're talking about the digital divide, not only in terms of who has all of these devices and who does not, but among those who have them, how much time is spent on what may not be the best use of time. Our guest is Professor Kevin Clark. He is a professor in the Instructional Technology Program, and he's also the director of the Center for Digital Media Innovation and Diversity in the College of Education and Human Development at George Mason University. You may want to read the article that caught our attention, thus the show. It's in the New York Times, May 29th. Wasting Time is New Divide in Digital Era, and we posted that on our Facebook page, so you can read the article that sparked this show. Richard is our next caller in Milwaukee. Hi, Richard.
Hi.
Hi.
Can you hear me?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I just wanted to say, first off, what an excellent program you have. I've enjoyed it for years, and this particular topic is very important to me. What I wanted to say is I think that we have to put more of a focus on teaching people how to learn and how to understand, and so that they'll be able to, in effect, create their own educational programs, because the acceleration of change that's going on right now is so fast that people, will have to have those types of tools. I had an experience that I was blessed to meet some people that had an educational program that talked about the stages of learning, what that was, how to improve them, and then how to identify the levels that you understood things. And it's taken me very far in my life, but it was, really on the peripheries of education. So I was just interested if your caller was aware of any programs that were focusing on that.
Mm-hmm. Richard, that's an excellent question. And as was mentioned, I teach in the instructional technology program here at George Mason University. And as part of that, we focus on instructional design. And instructional design has a process, and we teach this process to our student. And what's interesting is that this process is technology independent, meaning it doesn't have to be situated or connected to any technology. So this, the basic five-step process that we use to create a face-to-face lecture and an online course is similar. And so what we want to make sure that our students get when they leave our program is a clear understanding of the process, because we know that the process, if done correctly, can then be used to integrate the tools to meet the needs of learners and to accomplish the outcomes that you're shooting for. So you're spot on in that having a focus be on process and methods and techniques is similar to in science, where the focus is on the scientific method. And so once you understand the scientific method, then it doesn't matter if you're working in chemistry or biology or physics.
Right. And is this, if I could just ask one more question, is this related anything to Barnes and the first PhD that was established at the State University of Buffalo, New York? Because he was part of the program that I was in when I was 18, and Russell Verdon actually was the genius behind it. And he said exactly what you're saying, that learning is a process that has distinct steps, and like golfing or swimming or anything else, if you understand those steps and if you exercise them, you can become an accelerated learner with better results. And that the understanding process is just the product of that process, and that you move through levels, which are actually stages of skill development, and it's just been really enriching for me to have that perspective, throughout my life. And I do business counseling, and I or consulting, and I share this with my clients, and they're amazed at things that they can use in their own life as well as the business. So, I'm just pleased to hear that, this is going on.
Well, and you can't leave out teachers. I mean, teachers, of course, are purveyors of the content. So they're delivering the content in classrooms and through training. The instructional design method that I mentioned is really targeting people who create content, so create training, who create course content.
And thank you so much, Richard, for your call. Bob in Stevens Point. Hello.
Good morning, Kathleen.
Hi, Bob.
I have a a wife who recently retired from teaching and a daughter who is currently teaching and, in fact, just finished her master's in technology in the classroom. I'm not sure what the program was called. But, you know, over the years I've heard the frustration of them trying to use computers in the classroom. This is at grade school levels. And not having enough equipment, not having the right equipment, the equipment being down. And they're always for fighting for funding. And I'm wondering if my thinking, and maybe old-fashioned, but maybe we should back off and fund more for the maybe start kids on computers in the middle school, knowing that they're going to be more competent at them. And, of course, they're going to have computers at home, and, you know, their skill levels will be pretty good by the time they hit you know, the middle school. But, you know, the problem is, practically speaking, computers are great, but with the funding shortcuts we have and, you know, our economy, we are not going to be able to put a computer in every kid's hand. And it's there's a lot of inefficiency and frustration in the classroom because of this, and there's just so I'm wondering what the, you know, what the experts feel in these fields. You know, can we really expect to progress?
All right, thank you very much for the call, Professor.
Yes, I totally agree and hear the frustration also where I am in terms of teachers who are in the classroom trying to integrate technology, and it is an access issue. Some schools have a lot of technology. Some schools don't have enough technology. Some schools have a lot of technology, but they don't have the expertise. So I think part of it is figuring out how to establish a baseline level of technology access and technology literacy. The other component of your question was, should we limit technology access and use until about middle school? I do think having students and having children exposed to technology is a good thing. And it opens the windows up to other opportunities, whether it's books or whether it's music that may not be available to them otherwise. But again, you heard some of the stats that we talked about in terms of who has access to what. Wi-Fi is a huge issue. There are some schools in the country who are beginning to let students bring their own devices. So they have a Wi-Fi enabled school, and they say, bring whatever you have, whether it's a laptop or iPad or whatever, and you can plug into our network. And I think that could be a way of moving away from schools becoming so device focused and instead allow people to bring their devices. But again, you will deal with issues of access. Mm-hmm. So there's no easy answer, and there's no easy solution.
Do you think there's something inherently distracting about all of these devices? I think about, you know, my own use of it, how easy it is to go to a social networking site, and you get sort of distracted by that, and you can go back several times a day. Is there something about just the amount of entertainment and the possibility of social connection with your friends that keeps us from using this in an educational way the way we should?
Well, I think it's person dependent. I still much rather call someone on the phone than send them an email.
Oh, that's nice.
That's just me. But you know, I notice when I go to conferences and lectures that there's a person in the front talking to everybody, and everybody's head is down looking at the device.
I know.
Are they paying attention? Are they, you know, looking for resources that this person just referred to? So I think there's a tendency to think that we have to be connected all the time. But I think that sometimes you just need to listen. You just need to talk with someone face to face, shake their hand, and you can use, I think social media and technology has its place, and it is the great multiplier. So when I meet you, then I can do a web search and find out who you know, and, you know, we may know the same person. And so then that expands our network or connects us. That's, I think, the power of technology. But technology, I don't think, can do as good a job of establishing a connection between two people as two people can do. Mm-hmm. So I think, again, this gets back to this whole notion of figuring out how to use technology in the way that exploits its tools and its capabilities.
It goes back to what you said earlier. Sometimes you just have to see the cat.
Exactly.
Right? Yep. More phone calls in a moment. 800-486-8655 is our number. Professor Kevin Clark, professor in the Instructional Technology Program, director of the Center for Digital Media Innovation and Diversity in the College of Education and Human Development at George Mason University, is our guest. And we're talking about the digital divide, not just in terms of who has the technology and who doesn't, but how we're using that technology. Our phone number, a couple lines are open. Bob, thanks for your call. 800-486-8655. 800-486-8655. Our email is talk@wpr.org. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Returning to phone calls, Marilee in Madison. Hi.
Hello. I'll turn down my radio.
Okay.
Can you hear me?
Oh, yes.
Hello?
Yes, we can hear you.
We hear you.
I can't hear you anymore.
I'm sorry, Marilee. I don't know why. Can you hear me now?
Oh, yeah, I can hear you now. I just turned off my radio a little bit. I'm sitting in my car because I got very excited about your program today. It is right up my alley. I represent an organization based in Madison called the National Telemedia Council, who promote the idea of media literacy. And we're 60 years old, so we've been around. And I wanted to say the thing that got me to call you is the call from Richard in, was he in Milwaukee?
Mm-hmm.
In which he was saying that it's one thing to teach kids to use the media, but it's another thing to teach more about the media. I think that's the word he used. And that is the difference between learning to be clever in using, you know, clever in knowing how to manipulate the machines and the devices, but and the difference between that and being able to be a critical thinker about it. That, I think, is something that is often difficult to do, but it can be done and is being done in many, many classrooms. There are a number of organizations, et cetera, et cetera. And now comes the whole digital addition to all of that. And we have people, in fact, right here in Madison, I don't know if you're familiar with the University School of Education, they have a conference coming up called Games Learning and GLS.
Society.
Games,
yeah, GLS.
And I forget what the S stands.
Games is Society.
Society.
What?
Games, okay. Learning and Society.
Society, yes. So perhaps, Kevin, you're familiar with all of that.
Yes, I've actually attended GLS, and there's some great people at Madison who are doing amazing work around games. Kurt Squire is there, and others, and so it's always a great opportunity to go and hear about the latest research.
Marilee, if you have a chance, go to our Facebook page and write a little comment about that, and we can also perhaps follow through with another show on the conference that's coming up, because it would be, there's a lot of interest in this area. You can go to the Kathleen Dunn Show. In terms of just learning how to be clever with all of this equipment, this is something, and maybe just because I'm old now and I know how to use a computer basically, but I don't know how to do a lot of the bells and whistles that will just allow more efficient communication. We don't, it seems to me, have a system in place in any way of how to guide people to use all of this.
Right. I mean, I remember, you know, we used to, typing used to be kind of the gateway to technology. And
right.
Everybody had to learn how to type.
Yeah.
And now there is no, you know, that class or that type of class with regard to digital media does not exist, partly because it's changing every day. And so, you know, the minute we started teaching everybody how to create websites using HTML, well, another tool came along and you didn't need to use HTML anymore. And you could just have a Facebook page. And so I think part of it is moving away from teaching specific tools and focusing on teaching ways of thinking and ways of designing. And so the challenge is, and this is one of the things that I always tell people or help people to try and understand, is having a really clear sense of what you want, what you're trying to do, and then you go out and you look for the technology. So too often people say, oh, I got to have a Facebook page, I got to have a Twitter account. And, you know, I always ask people, why? You know, do you know why you need those things? And I think helping people to begin to ask those questions first, I think goes a long way to making sure that the technology is effectively used.
What's the update, Professor Clark, on this $200 million proposal from the FCC to go out into schools and libraries to teach digital literacy? Is that going to happen?
You know, I don't know. I looked, and I don't know that they've made an official announcement in terms of it actually happening. I know it was a proposal, and one of the FCC commissioners has been talking about it as a proposal. So I think it's still in the proposal stage, and I think it hasn't been made official yet. I would be interested to see how and when that particular component, meaning the Digital Literacy Corps, becomes official.
Merrill Lee, thanks for your call. Send us more information on the conference, please. Jesse in West Bend, hi.
Hi. I'd just like to say that my friend's son, whom I'm very close with, just graduated second grade today. I'm here at the school picking him up now. And they're teaching him to use a computer in his classes. He's using Paint and Word. And me being a computer geek, I guess, I'm also teaching him different things with computers and, you know, I'll make websites and show him. My new thing is making computer games.
Yep.
So, and he's just so interested in learning computers, and I've got a smartphone, and he wants an iPad. Mm-hmm. It's just he wants the technology.
Right. And see, that is a Jesse, that is a good example of using technology in a way that is transformative. Meaning, you're using Paint. A Paint program to work with a child in terms of art, how to draw colors, and you're using a word processing tool to help them with language and writing and composition. That is how technology should be used, instead of just saying, hey, you know, sit down and just use this without any focus or direction.
Thanks, Jesse. Gabrielle in Madison, hi.
Hi, can you hear me?
Yes, we can.
Hi, my name is Gabriel. First of all, I just graduated as an electrical engineer from Milwaukee School of Engineering. I'm just passing through Madison, listening to your show, and I'd really like to say how much I'm in step with what Dr. Kevin Clark is saying, that this, some people think that this technology is evil, it's just because they don't understand it. If you think of an example, like a hammer, you know, a hammer can be used for something destructive or something constructive. So if you teach people to think about these things as tools instead of a destructive device, then you can use it to your advantage. And I'd just like to say that I totally agree with what Dr. Kevin Clark has been saying up until now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and understanding what's in your toolbox is important, so that you're not using a hammer to do what a screwdriver is supposed to do. And I think sometimes we do that with technology. We say, oh, technology can fix everything. Well, maybe not, and maybe not in a particular way. So I think the toolbox is a really good analogy to help us begin to deal with technology.
Yeah, thanks so much for the call. Quickly, Lisa, we're almost out of time. Hi, Lisa.
Yeah, hello.
Yes, go ahead. Quickly, please.
Okay, yeah, this has been an interesting show. Everything you've talked about, the critical thinking skills and the process of information literacy is basically the job description of the school media specialist. And I guess I'd just like to say that these skills are being promoted in our schools and taught through that venue.
That's good to hear. The question is, how many schools have media specialists? Do many of them, Professor Clark?
Not enough. The ones that do have them, they need more, and then some schools actually share media specialists. I think there needs to be more media specialists, and mm-hmm. if the media specialists could also be connected with content people, I think that would be even better.
Thank you so much for being with us, Professor Clark. It was really an interesting hour.
Thank you for having me.
Our guest this hour, Professor Kevin Clark. He's at George Mason University, where he is director of the Center for Digital Media Innovation and Diversity. Thanks to Brett Jaspers and Rhonda Fanning for producing and on-air producing this program. Great conversations ahead. We'll be with you again tomorrow.